Hello, everyone. I'm John. I'm a very, very grateful member of this worldwide fellowship called Al-Anon. Very grateful to be amongst my recovery brothers and sisters today. Thank you, Keith, very much for asking me. Thank you, those who suggested me, I think. And I'm here to talk to you about my experience in this program. I'm here to talk to you about what got me here and what I've learned here and how I've grown here and how I've changed here and how I've become a better person, a more accepting person, a more loving person, and less of an asshole. I came to program because my sister's drinking bothered me. She was 4 years younger than I, and I was sort of turned into a parent very early in childhood. And as her substitute mommy daddy, I took that job seriously. And only quite recently realized that a lot of that job taking, a lot of that caregiving, a lot of that wanting to protect her and to guide her was a kind of projection of what I felt I didn't have in that family that was so seriously affected by the family disease of alcoholism. In that family, with five children and two parents, in that family where there was love and humor and intelligence and hard work, there were also tremendous abuses, violence, emotional abuse, sexual abuse, distortion, confusion, worry, and fear. And although I was sent to a religious grammar school and high school, there was no particular focus on any energy other than the energy of hard work and figuring it out and doing it right. My mother, whose drinking bothered me, was a perfectionist. She was that combination of person who needed escape through her rage, escape through drink, and also who acted very, very much like if it wasn't done the way it needed to be done, and the way it needed to be done was her way, if it wasn't done that way, the world would come to an end. She was a tremendously anxious woman. She was a woman who grew up in Dickensian poverty, and she had overcome so many things in her life to marry and to have five children and to have a beautiful home. And I honor those achievements in her, and I only wish she could have come to some spiritual peace and some emotional peace in her life. She did not. So as this older brother of the baby of the family, I'm the fourth of the five, this younger sister, her drinking was troublesome, and her husband was calling me every day and saying what had happened the night before, the horror story of the previous night's incident. And after a while, her stepson, her husband's son, who was in AA, came to me and said, "Let's do an intervention." And I thought not a question to ask. I didn't look for anyone's opinion or advice. I didn't talk to any of the people in my life I could have talked to. I said, "Yes, let's do it," because I had my halo on and my cape on. I thought I knew better. I thought my love was enough. I thought my desire for her to be happy, happy according to my rules, was enough. And so we did an intervention. I talked her into going to a local place that was already organized to have a bed for her. And before we went to her house, got some clothes, said goodbye to her husband, I drove her to the place. And before I left her, she said, "John, I don't feel good about this." And I said, "No, they're going to help you. They know how to help you here, and they're going to help you." And I left her, and she promptly lost her mind. It was a Friday. She couldn't get out until, I believe it was Monday or Tuesday. She was stuck there for the weekend. They had taken her cell phone, but she found phones from people who were working there, and she would call me, and she would say a lot of angry things at me. And she just quickly snapped. And a lot of those angry things were true. I was self-righteous. I did think I knew better. I did think I was better. And all of those things have come to my consciousness because of the work I've been able to do in Al-Anon, because of the steps, because of the meetings, because of the speaking and listening. I know I can look at my self-righteousness. I can look at my superiority. I can look at my desire to impose my will because I know better. I'm my mother's son. And I inherited the aspects of the family disease that have been in my family for generations. I, too, am a member of the alcoholic tradition. All of that distorted thinking, all of that need to do it on my own, all of that need to hide behind my will is living in me. So I get to program. Because when she got out of the rehab, she promptly took some furniture and the dog and found an apartment, did not tell anyone where that apartment was, and soon thereafter called her husband to say that she had taken all her pills and was drinking a bottle of vodka and saying goodbye. She did not die. That suicide attempt failed, thankfully. But slowly, ever so slowly, we repaired the relationship and came back into connection and communication. She never got sober. She tried AA for a few minutes on her own. I had nothing to do with that. And she wasn't able to stick with it and left. And she never got sober, and our relationship continued with periods of great difficulty. I was alternately the best thing that was ever born and the worst demon from hell that had ever lived. So there were these regular, repeated intervals of being loved and cared for, and then falling into some perceived sin that I had committed and being relegated to the enemy who could not be tolerated. I was willing, because of Al-Anon, to work with these cycles. I was willing to withdraw when she was angry at me and to step back in when we could have a loving relationship. I couldn't have done that. God knows what I would have done. If I would have stayed in the relationship or not, I don't know. But little by little, every time I was excommunicated, there was a slightly altered relationship to that excommunication. So this went on for about 15 years. And a year and 4 months ago, during a period of excommunication, she was diagnosed with lung cancer. We got back into communication. She called me, and she died 4 months later. Because of this program, I was able to be there for her. Because of this program, within those months of her diagnosis, I was once again excommunicated. I once again did something that angered her. So within that short period when she was dying, I was also turned out for a little while. And when that happened, my sponsor said to me, John, you can learn loving detachment from her. You can really learn it, or you can replace her when she's dead. And that's my experience in this program. I keep bumping up against the wounds. I keep bumping up the people and situations, bumping up against the people and situations that I need to look at and heal. That's what I get to bring the steps to. That's what I get to bring to meetings and to sponsors and to phone calls. That's what I get to do. I get to look at the nuts and bolts of me. I have to drink some water because I'm not breathing. And in the self-examination, influenced by love and acceptance, in that growing self-knowledge, I get to start to change because I start seeing my behavior a little more quickly. I start seeing my behavior a little more honestly. I start remembering to put the focus back on myself. I start to acknowledge that every time I'm activated, every time a situation or a person activates me, I get another opportunity to look at my wounding. I get another opportunity to look at how I'm hurt and how this experience of living with the family disease has shaped me. And all of those wounds get to be brought out into the daylight. They get to be healed in the light of the program. They get to be healed in the light of love. with all of you helping me. I can't do this without you. And in that family home, I was taught, you have to figure it out for yourself. You have to work harder. You have to struggle harder. Just do more. Now I know oftentimes to do less. And the less is sitting with the feelings. The less is praying and meditating. The less is making a phone call. The less is just allowing the experience to be true before I jump in and do something to alter it. I love the three A's, awareness, acceptance, and action. And I know that I find the middle A the most difficult. I'm quick to be aware because I grew up in a firebox. So I'm quick to be aware. I grew up with the awareness of someone who is expecting death at every moment. And I'm good at action because I want to fix things. I want to make myself comfortable. I want to make you comfortable. I want to make you all right so I can be all right. But that middle A, that acceptance part, that's hard for me. And what I've come to learn slowly with the work here, what I've come to learn is that acceptance means letting it be true and doing my best to remove my judgment from it. So I'm allowed to have anger. I'm allowed to be self-piteous. I like to say that it says don't wallow in self-pity in our do's and don'ts. It doesn't say never feel self-pity, right? And I get to decide what today's wallow is. Today's wallow might be longer or shorter than yesterday's or tomorrow's. But I allow myself to feel sorry for myself when it comes up. I allow myself sometimes a day of grief. Sometimes unplugging and zoning out on something on television or on a bike ride or a walk. I allow myself to the best of my ability to identify how I'm feeling and where I am and to stand in that place. Because if I don't know where I am, it's very, very much harder to move in any positive direction. If I don't know where I'm starting, it's hard to point myself towards love, towards healing, towards growth. If I know where I am, then I can take that to God. I can take that to program. And I can start to apply 6 and 7. I can start to become entirely willing. And then I can humbly ask. Humility is one of my favorite things about program. I have had tons of false humility. Growing up in that family, it didn't feel safe to be too targetable. To stand up in this light in front of all of you and be seen and heard is dangerous on some level inside of me. It's dangerous because if I was seen and heard, I could be targeted. In a lot of different ways, I could be treated sarcastically, I could be mocked, I could be blamed, I could be punished. So I now am more willing to show myself authentically, to be seen and to be heard. I now am more willing to accept the fact that your opinion of me is not the truth. It's your opinion of me. And that's really hard. All those hard things I heard when I first came in, that other people's opinions of me are none of my business. That was very hard to hear. To hear that there are no victims, only volunteers. I'm a grown man. I get to say yes and no to anything and everything. No one's holding my feet to the fire. So I get to use my will in the service of what is feeling like it's in my best interest. I also remember my sponsor telling me frequently when I would say I was anxious about something. My sponsor would say, well, you know, anxiety and excitement create the same physical experience. So maybe you should start saying you're excited. Every time I heard that, I wanted to land a punch. But I didn't. And slowly, I allow myself to be anxious. But I also start to question, am I anxious? Am I excited? And usually it's a combination of both. The other thing that happened that I'm recalling when I'm thinking about all the things that were hard to swallow and hard to take and hard to accept was at my Sunday meeting. Before the Sunday meeting, I was speaking to a fellow whose recovery I greatly admired. And I spoke to her about something that was going on in my life at that time. And I said, I just felt so much shame about that. I said, I'm really, really having a hard time with shame. It's one of the big things that I'm dealing with. And this fellow said to me, she said, well, what's in the shame for you? Once again, I felt like punching. But it stayed with me for weeks and months and years. So now when shame comes up, I think to myself, what comfort, what familiarity is in that shame? What evasion is in that shame? I have a very young Al-Anon friend. And he said to me quite recently, he said, you know, John, I was thinking, shame is a blanket I pull over other feelings. Often the case, I think anger is a convenient emotion that's on the top shelf that I grab before I see all the other emotions under it. I think each of us may have our own emotions that are more familiar. And familiarity, instead of breeding contempt, familiarity breeds habit. So I get to start questioning my habits. I get to start noticing my habits. Again, the work here gives me a relationship to myself that's informed by the step work and informed by the sharing, and that becomes a little more honest, little by little. Little by little, one of my favorite things that I've ever heard in Al-Anon. I say it a lot. I say things like little by little, and I say God's in charge often. I know people have a problem with the God word. As I said, I was educated in grammar school and high school in a religious school. That God was very punishing, very reward and punishment, very judgmental. That God kept a scorecard on how I was doing day by day. I don't choose to put my faith in that God today. But I grew up with some sense of God, so when I came to Al-Anon and started to define, to the best of my ability, the God of my understanding, I understood that I had the option to make that God unconditional love. And that didn't happen immediately either. Little by little, I started to build that God. And now I consider the spirit of unconditional love to be my higher power. Now, unconditional love is something that in an alcoholic home or a dysfunctional home is very hard to come by. And it's hard for me to give. But as I understand it, it's love that can't be gained or lost. It's love that just exists always. So if there is some energy of love that is in existence, that is in presence with me all the time, that loves me regardless of my good or bad deeds, regardless of my kind or unkind thinking, if there's such a thing, that's what I want to believe in. And like I've heard in Al-Anon, I'm not a slow learner, but I'm a fast forgetter. So I get to go to a lot of meetings. I'm retired. There's Zoom. There's some in-person meetings. I get to go to as many meetings as I choose to go to. I get to talk to as many people on the phone as I choose to. I get to read the literature, our beautiful, beautiful, rich literature. I get to read that as often as I need to read it. I get to remember a slogan. I get to laugh at myself with God. I walk around the house and talk to my higher power sometimes like a crazy person. And why not? So the gentle lessons of program have slowly eased up the binary thinking I grew up with, the idea that I had to perform in a certain way to be acceptable, never mind lovable, just to be acceptable, the idea that things were good and bad according to my judgment, the idea that everything was either a punishment or a reward. I came to understand, after years of work, that one of my foundational defects of character is expecting punishment. again, because of what I've learned and because of the conditionality and my own fear of not being accepted and loved, I came to understand that I was anticipating punishment in all my relationships, in all occasions, mostly unconsciously, mostly at a low level, but it was something that, again, I got to drag out into the light and consider. So if everything is happening for my benefit, if I'm not being punished, if things aren't there to teach me a lesson in some negative or harsh way, to teach me a lesson in the way that that religious training was fond of teaching lessons. If that's not the case, then the question becomes, what can I learn here? What's available for me to look at? What's available for me to ask higher power to help me with? What's available for me to feel, for me to journal about, for me to pray about? Traffic still remains a big pain in my butt. It's such a simple and consistent thing, and it's so hard for me to be recovered behind the wheel of my car. It just is, you know, and I get to do that once or more than once a day. I get to be patient. I get to let someone go ahead of me. I get to not curse someone out. I get to not think that everyone on the road is an idiot besides me. I get to accept that a lot of people don't use turn signals. So the learning is available always and everywhere. Knowing I was going to speak with you today, I felt all sorts of anxiety. I felt all sorts of pressure. Again, that conditionality of love. I had to perform in some way so I could be acceptable, so I could prove something to you. And of course, that's a human feeling, and I get to have that feeling, but I don't have to invest my belief in it. I get to also have my loving friends and sponsor tell me, just let the Spirit work through you. Just do your best to give it over. So that false humility that was a deep part of me, that false humility that I thought protected me from being a target, that sense of, oh, not so much, oh, shucks, all of that, wasn't so honest. It was just trying not to appear too targetable in front of you, not to stand too tall, not to be too clearly seen. I would take myself down a peg before you would. And now, little by little, I hand that over, and I try to just say thank you if I'm complimented. I try to still make a joke sometimes, but be less anxious about being who I am and how I am. I've heard it's a program of self-acceptance and not self-improvement. And that has come to be true in my experience. God does the heavy lifting. Higher power is at work. That's what the steps have taught me. When I hand my life and my will over to the care of a power greater than myself, I start down the pathway of developing a relationship with that power. This is a spiritual program. And each of us, again, as my sponsor says, has the opportunity, because of the genius of this program, to define the spirit that we choose to put our faith in. Each of us gets to name our own higher power. So that there's no uniform religious kind of God that we have to believe in. We're just encouraged to consider that there's something bigger than ourselves. Something outside of ourselves that may care for us. That may offer us its energy and its loving guidance. I'm fond of looking back at my life and seeing breadcrumbs. That's what I call it. All the breadcrumbs that led me to this moment, to be standing here at this moment. So many things, so many unexpected twists and turns, so many moments that I said yes to that led to the next opportunity to say yes or no. And if I look back, as I do, and consider that I've always been under that care, then I choose to see all of those moments as God's breadcrumbs. So many things have not been in my plan. As much will as I was exerting over my life, there's also the fact of accident and happenstance and chance. My whole career, my relationships, coming to Al-Anon, all of these things have happened because something else happened and because I was nudged in one direction or another. So I choose to believe that Spirit has always worked in my life. I choose to believe that I've always been guided and protected. You know, we all suffer a great deal in this life. There's physical illness, there's mental illness, there's poverty, there's pain, there's fear. We all suffer from these human experiences. And somehow we're all sitting here together in this room on this day. And as far as I can see, all of us are pretty okay right here and right now. It doesn't mean I don't feel things, but I can relegate them to the land of feeling. I can relegate them to my internal experience. My internal experience has grown in strength and reality and truth, and my external experience has grown in calm and acceptance and serenity. Because if I'm keeping the focus on myself, slowly as I work this program, the focus becomes more and more internal. More and more about my thoughts and feelings. More and more about what I'm telling myself. The narratives, the stories I'm writing. I say that we're all narrative-building machines. We're all storytellers. Everything I look at, I tell a story about. Like those people in traffic. So maybe I can start telling better stories. Maybe I can start being in relationship to the negative stories, to the fearful stories, to the angry stories. Maybe I can say, oh, John, you're blaming someone for something when they're just doing what they do. Or, oh, John, you're afraid and you want to do something else to distract from the fear. Little by little, I have this deeper, truer relationship with my thoughts and my feelings. And that, to me, is the essence of recovery. Building the relationship with myself and my higher power. I need less for things to be a certain way outside of myself now. And it's a damn good thing as I age. Because there's the loss of all that agency and power in aging. There's the physical decline. There's the mirror. There's the reality that if I can make more peace with what's inside my head and my heart, I can be more accepting. More accepting of you and more accepting of me. And that's the direction I want to move in. That's what I want to think of after I answer the question of what I'm thinking and what I'm feeling and how am I today. I can name how I am today and then I can point myself towards more love and acceptance. This sister who died was the beneficiary of my Al-Anon program. The last 6 weeks of her life, I sat at her deathbed every day. I would make the drive across town. And I would say hi to her husband, and I'd go into the bedroom and sit by her hospital bed, eventually her hospital bed, and sit there. Sometimes I read to her, sometimes I talked to her, sometimes I just sat there. I was able to feel accepting and loving. I was able to feel a release of any of the anger, resentment, blame, any of the hurt feelings. I loved the end quote in that beautiful reading from Courage to Change. The end quote I scribbled down, forgiving is not forgetting, it's letting go of the hurt. I had been able to let go of the hurt in our relationship because of Al-Anon. I was able to do that. That doesn't mean that I'm now in some altered state. That means that in that particular relationship with the help of program, with that human being whose behavior had inspired my entrance into Al-Anon, with that human being, I was able to say goodbye and feel clean and clear. And that's a blessing. That's a very great, great blessing. Again, I'm old enough to have lost a lot of people. And how do I feel when those people are dead and gone? Do I feel guilty or shameful? Or do I feel like I did my best? Do I accept that where I was at the time was the best I could do? And little by little, I grow in that direction, accepting of my misbehaviors, accepting of my selfishness, accepting of my casual cruelty, thoughtlessness. I get to be a full human being now. That's what the acceptance part is. That's what the release of judgment allows me. When I go from my awareness of my behavior or your behavior and move towards that acceptance, I get to see that I am just a man. Just another human being on this planet in this short, short, beautiful, horrible life. Just walking step after step. Next indicated action after next indicated action. Being a human being. You know, when I got to program, it took a long time to realize all the things that I had mislearned in school and at home. And one of the things I had mislearned was that it wasn't all right to be human. It wasn't all right to make a mistake. It wasn't all right to be sloppy and clumsy. It wasn't all right to do things that might be hurtful. And now I don't want to behave in a way that's hurtful. I want to be some sterling example of humanity, but I'm not. I'm just a man. And that lack of acceptance has now turned into a lot more acceptance. And I have a lot more to go. A lot more to go. I was in a relationship with a man I was able to marry for 32 years. And 9 years ago on March 5th, he dropped dead suddenly of a heart attack. No indication that was going to happen. So that creates a lot of shock. That creates a lot of things that take a long time to deal with. But it also creates the opportunity for me to grow and learn from everything that happened in those 32 years to how I'm interacting with his death, to how I'm interacting with myself, to the choices I'm going to make as a single man. And again, the opportunity now to be where I am and to live with the best choices I can make with the help of program and higher power and all of you. My sponsor said, you'll find out you have choices you didn't know you had. And that comes to be true. Because if I'm living in fear, if I'm living in anger and resentment, my choices get very limited. If I'm believing that I have to do something or be something to be acceptable or lovable, my choices get narrow. If I'm living in the light of a spirit that has unconditional love for me, then if I make a mistake, I try to do better next time. The release of the anxiety of being in charge of everything is enormously pleasurable. And I still feel a load of tension in my body. Most of the time, some measure of tension in my body. I don't know that it'll ever go away, but it's getting better little by little. And again, I can sometimes laugh at it or sometimes put my arm around my own shoulder and take good care of myself. I am responsible for my own happiness. I am responsible for my own well-being. I am responsible not for the first thought, but for what comes after that. And not for the feelings necessarily. They just happen like the weather. But how do I deal with them? How do I express them? Can I define them? Can I express them? Can I share them? Can I allow myself to sit in discomfort? And that's another thing that's been so enormously important for me in program. Little by little, I've grown in the willingness to be uncomfortable. Little by little, I don't have to act on my discomfort. I don't have to eat something or drink something or do something or buy something. I still do sometimes. But I know better when I'm in the easier, more connected place. I know that I can just sit with whatever is going on with me and the discomfort will pass. I've heard in program that problems will go away unsolved. And that happens all the time. The things that bother me today are suddenly gone and cared for tomorrow, or I'd stop thinking about them. So there's a lot more humor, a lot more ease in my life, and a lot more willingness to be honest with all of you. I don't know how much more I have to say. I don't know how long I've been talking. Do you? Do I have time? Keith tells me I have time. My sponsor suggested I read a poem I've written. So I'm going to indulge myself and read a poem I've written. Do not resist the shadows. They exist to modulate the journey. However gently or abruptly they may obscure a joy, they are not impediments. Like fear, they exist to guide, to regulate the timing, and lead us on the way. As bright light may blind, so shadows may soften. In the early days of the virus, I had a lot of reconnection to childhood feelings. Maybe it was the isolation and the loneliness of that that felt a lot like that childhood home. Whatever it was, I had a lot of moments of feeling like I was shadowed. And I came to bring a chair outside and sit on my patio under a tree in the shade. And I would say to myself, I'm in the shadow right now. I think it all is there for my good and my growth. I think denying or changing my feelings or programming myself out of my feelings is not a good idea. I think being with them and deciding when I'm wallowing is a good idea. I felt so emotional listening to that beautiful prayer. I thank you, Kimberly. So much emotion to be in a fellowship of equals where we get to hand this information back and forth and back and forth. I don't say anything new. I say things I've heard. I hand to you what's been handed to me, and I keep having this experience that we hand it back and forth. And that makes me feel grateful. And I'm moved by the idea that we're all trying to live lives that are more serene, that we're all trying to heal the wounds of the family disease of alcoholism, that we're all trying to admit we love alcoholics, and we may love ourselves. And giving up that binary right and wrong, good and bad, has been very helpful in my understanding of the disease of alcoholism. And I think that if I can really appreciate the suffering that we all endure and try to heal from, I can be a lot less judgmental. What if it's no one's fault? What if it's just the lesson of the day? What if nothing's wrong? Because it isn't. We're all going to die. Is that wrong? I don't know. I didn't write the script. We're all going to have days of trouble. And we're all going to have moments of joy and pleasure. What if it's all just as it should be? It's only the story that I tell and attach to things that make me think otherwise. So maybe I can change that story. Maybe I can encourage myself in the pleasure of all of it. Sometimes in my kitchen in the morning, looking out the window, having my coffee, just overwhelmed listening to the birds? Just overwhelmed at the way the sky looks? I ride my bike every morning on a bike path down by the LA River. And there's just such pleasure in it. Some of it's ugly. Downright ugly. But there's pleasure to be had in the light or the sound of the birds or the look of the water. And I've also recognized that I'm a man who likes to create community. On that bike that I've been riding down by the river, I say hello to everyone in the morning. I say, morning, good morning. Just something I started doing. And then I started to have fun with myself because I recognized that some people were willing to say good morning. Some people were not. I recognized that some people would nod and not speak. And little by little, I've been doing it maybe about 10 months now, I have this whole community down by the river in the morning. People say hi, good morning, before I do. People wave. And when I've been passing someone for a long time, continuing to say hi or good morning, and they eventually say good morning, I feel a little ego gratification. But I also feel guided to be kind and friendly in the world. And of course my ego's involved. I'm a human being. I get to have an ego. And like my false humility, my ego was something I fought with for so much of my life, for the same reason. Because my ego makes me targetable. If I admit my ego, I'm standing up and being seen, and therefore I can be shot at or laughed at. So little by little, I get to have my ego pleasures as I get them. And as long as it's not driving the bus, I'll do my best to be accepting of my ego. I really don't know what else to say to you. I love the program. I love the people in program. I'm so grateful to be a member of something that's a worldwide fellowship. I'm so glad that we're a fellowship of equals. None of us is more than any of the other of us. We all need each other, every one of us. I'm glad for newcomers who remind me the ways I'm new and become new again. I'm glad for the old timers because they share their comfort and the gratitude they've been able to grow through all the years of program. And I'm glad to be able to share this love with all of you today. Thank you very much.